Are you ready?
Ready to transform your life and step into the person that you say you want to be.
Ready to stop talking and start doing?
I'm Ange, a health and fitness coach.
And I'm Ashley, a Reiki master and energy healer. And we are here to help you do exactly that.
And you're busy. We get that, because we are too.
But even with the challenges and chaos, you deserve and can live a life full of absolute joy, happiness, and purpose.
We want you to join us in taking radical responsibility so that you can take everything in your life to that next level.
Have the best sex of your life.
Live in a body that you love.
Let go of worry and stress.
And live in total alignment.
Your happier, healthier, and amazing life is waiting for you.
Let's get into today's episode.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the Transform Your Life podcast. Angela, baby, how are you?
I'm doing good, girl. Your hat today. Oh, I love it. I love that you're just like embracing the hats, just rocking it. They look so good on you.
Yeah, thank you. Florida was the like game changer for everything, it seems. Yeah, I wanted them all in wide brimmed hats because we were just going to do less sunscreen this year. And while shopping, I was just like, I want one too. And yeah. So I've just been embracing this like awesome hat train. And yeah, so this is the fave. This is the fave hat right now. So
good.
Thank you.
Yeah, girl. That's good. I love it. I love it.
Awesome. Are you a hat girl?
No, I don't think so.
No?
No. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I've always thought it's because of, I don't know if it's my face shape or something. I feel like it doesn't work as well for me. I think that my face looks better when there's like not a hat, but.
Isn't that funny? Because I would say that you and I have similar face shapes.
I think my face is a lot like, you think so? No.
Girl, I've seen pictures of us. Like,
one your goes face is a lot longer. What do you think?
Yeah, maybe yours is a little more round.
Mine's more, and I have more like cheeky, I have more cheeks.
Okay.
Right? And so I don't know if it's a shadowy thing or what. I don't know what it is. Okay. But I just, maybe in the future I will be a hat girl. Okay. But right now, in this moment, at this day in 2022, I'm not a hat girl.
Fair enough. Okay. All right. We're going to dive in, baby.
All right. Yes. So let's dive in. So first of all, today we're going to talk all about genetics and how they do and don't play a role when it comes to trying to change your body. And so often people come in and they're like, oh, like I've tried everything, but I just can't lose weight. It's just my genetics. And today I'm going to give you all of the reasons why it's not your genetics and just give you guys a little bit of kind of backstory on it. So if we look back at things 150 years ago, if you were to be really large, and even if you were to see pictures of these people, they wouldn't be large in today's standards. But when you were looking at their bodies, it was actually a big thing. The big woman or the big man was like this spectacle, right? At the circus, right? I'm sure you have seen like the posters. Yeah. It would be this big thing and everybody would go and they would look and it would be like so rare. Almost like it just wasn't common.
Right.
And so have genetics changed that much since 150 years ago from those people to now that the spectrum in terms of the average weight for a woman or the average weight for a man can range so much?
Right.
They haven't.
No.
Maybe 30 pounds, maybe range, maybe a range of 30 pounds, plus or minus because of your genetics, right?
Right.
That's the same as like, there's men that are 5'2" and there's men that are 7'2", but most, they fit in the middle genetically, right? And so with weight, it's exactly the same thing. But there's 10 things that have highly affected the past 150 years, which are the key reasons why maybe you as the listener haven't been able to lose weight. So that's what we're going to dive into. First of all, I want to preface this that like I am somebody who my genetics, if I didn't live the lifestyle that I do, I am not the person who's going to be able to just be in a smaller shaped body because of that. I do totally know it because of the other people in my life. But they also live a lifestyle that is in sync with these things. And that's what we see because people will be like, well, my mom was always big or my dad was always big. So therefore, I'm going to be big. Yeah, you might be bigger boned. Yeah, you might be having a different shape body than the person that's able to eat thousands of calories. But again, we're going back to a 30 pound range. We're not looking at like a 200 pound range or even a 300 pound range. That is all environmental.
Amazing. And so when you go back to history a little bit, the thing that shows up for me, and I'm not sure if this is one of the 10 things, but abundance. So the kings and the queens and those who were abundant, they were a little bit heavier, and it was a sign of like being plump was sexy. Mm. It was beautiful because it meant that you had enough to support your family, that you had so much that you had too much. Mm. Right. Mm-hmm. And whereas if you think about like the peasants or the people in those lower class stations were maybe starving, they were, you know, malnourished, undernourished. And so that plumpness was a sign of that. And I would say we live in a very abundant, we live in a society where we have food at our fingertips and then way too much more. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I wonder if that is, I don't know if it's on your list, but that's something that kind of just popped in there, that mm-hmm. plumpness.
We have one point that kind of leans in that direction. So when we get there, we can definitely connect the two. But I would say the perception of the body, or the perception of being abundant, our perception of that is definitely flipped, right? In terms of what we see as being the appealing body.
Absolutely.
Or being the body that you want. And whether that's been through the media or through, just that comparison piece, it's definitely flip-flop from that place. But mm-hmm. all right.
But I think we don't live in a society now where abundance is so, it's right. connected, or it's connected to food.
Mm-hmm.
Abundance for us doesn't necessarily connect to having an abundance of resources to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas many years ago, your richness, your abundance would have been in the food and the mm-hmm. harvest. And so
totally.
Anyways, yeah.
Totally.
Let's get started. Okay. What do we got to do?
All right. Number one. And this one's probably the most obvious for a lot of people. The way we eat is totally different. Think about the way people used to eat. Totally. So your hyper palatable, highly processed foods going into the body in an abundance. And so when we're looking at it, so many of those foods that are so highly processed, your body doesn't know what to do with, right? And so if you're somebody that thinks like, oh yeah, it's just my genetics, I would often ask them to, let's look at your food diary and see how much of your food is coming close to the source or not in that highly processed stage, and how much is really, really processed. Because even if you're eating same calorie for calorie, 1,000 calories here of highly processed food, or 1,000 calories of things that are going to be really nourishing for your body, essentially they're not equal and they're not the same. And so for somebody that wants to make the improvement, I would say that's the first step, is let's look at those foods that aren't as processed and make that switch, right? Mm. And so when it comes to being overweight or being obese, I think the hardest part with that is how palatable things are. And so your things that, like, your sugary foods, your salty foods, your convenience foods, they're just, not that they can't be included, they can. It's just that when we're looking to change our body, if a lot of your diet is coming from that, the signal that you're telling your body is not the right signal. So if you are having a chicken breast, right, and you're getting it that it's like your frozen chicken breast, and you read the package and it says 10% meat protein, right? What's the other 90%, right?
That's actually terrifying.
Like, that's one thing for people. If you're not sure, look at the packaging on something and read the percentage of meat protein, and it will blow your marbles. Because it's like, okay.
Shouldn't it be 100% meat protein?
Yeah, it should be. But they don't. And so have you ever had frozen chicken breast and been like, this kind of tastes like fish? Or this kind of tastes not like chicken. Have you ever had that?
Yeah, it tastes like rubber or like a shoe or...
Yeah, because it's been processed and manufactured in that way. And so that's a huge, huge thing when it comes to, if you're putting that in your body, if your body doesn't know what to do with these like chemicals or foods that are really, really highly processed, then you're not going to be in a position to like get the body that you want, just because so much of your diet is coming from those things. You think you're eating chicken, but you're not even eating chicken, right?
Oh my gosh. That makes me think of, I just recently heard this. I haven't done any research on it, but it would not surprise me. KFC cannot call themselves Kentucky Fried Chicken anymore because it's literally not chicken that they use.
That's wild.
They are not birds. They do not. It's literally this thing that gets grown, and it's so their name, anything that you see based on them will only ever say KFC. They cannot say chicken.
Oh my God, that is wild.
Isn't that, like, that is also so like wild. So gross to me where I'm like, man, we're just making this like.
Yeah. But totally, yeah. Totally. And yeah, and even I would just say like the hyperpalatability, there are so.
What does that mean?
That things that are really good for your palate. So stimulating. So
yummy.
Sugar,
so,
salt, yes.
Okay.
So when it's really palatable, like to the point of like you can't stop, right? Those are those trigger foods that it's like when you eat it, your palate's like, oh my God. And so there are little scientists that are working all over the world to create these foods for us. They're making the food so that you, when it goes into your system, it essentially makes it you so you can't stop. So they're designing drugs, essentially, is the way
I bet
I
you
like
can't eat
it.
Just one is like.
Exactly. It's exactly that. And so they, these scientists are designing that. So for these people that are really overweight and they think there's something wrong with me, they're like, why can't I stop? Like, I can't stop eating the chips and I don't know why. It's like there was a little scientist over there that made the perfect combination in his little laboratory so that you wouldn't be able to stop. Not something wrong with you, just. When we know that that's what all these big food companies are doing, are creating these drugs through food.
Yep.
And then you look at all the people who have food addiction that even end up in this camp of overweight or obese. And they're like, I don't know why I can't stop. But so much of that, we're not to blame them. But that's a big, big factor for people being super aware that when that's going into your system, that is what's happening. That's what the body's doing. So the body's not going, oh, I'm going to release body fat right now. You're giving it the signal the same way that you would with drugs. So serotonin, dopamine, all of those signals in your brain are just like, whoa, give me more, give me more, give me more, right? And so it's, I'm totally about including foods, but I do think that's one thing when people are coming to the drawing board and being like, what is my issue? We need to be looking at where does the balance of those two things exist? And for things that right now are those trigger foods, we have to eliminate them from the house until we're ready to trust ourselves with them again. Because for that time, you're still going to have that same drug response. It'd be the same thing. You would get the cocaine out of the house. You would get the alcohol out of the house temporarily while you're repairing that, right?
Right. And one thing that's kind of popping into my brain is our interview with Dr. Cesar Lara, where he talked about when we eat those highly processed foods, our fat cells are actually designed to protect us and hold toxins from our bodies. Mm-hmm. So when we eat too much of that, our fat cells fill up.
Yeah.
And even though you're doing all the right things, you keep eating all of those toxins, it's going to fill up your fat cells.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, yeah. And you know what?
Together.
It is. And the interesting thing about fat cells, and I don't know if you know this about the science, but.
I probably don't.
but okay. So every time you yo-yo diet, you know, I'm sure lots of people listening are these people who have gained and lost the same 20, 30, 40, 50 pounds. Every time that you gain weight, you add more fat cells to your body. When you lose weight, those fat cells don't go away. They just shrink.
I did know that, yes.
And yeah, and so they're still there. And so every time you gain and lose that same weight, it's going to be harder for you to, essentially harder for you to lose. So A, getting off the yo-yo and finding a way that you can sustainably diet is one way to do it. But the other big thing I think you want to be thinking about is what are you nourishing and what are you planting inside your body? When you're talking about those toxins really making the fat cells grow, it's kind of like being able to, if you think about growing a garden, it's the exactly same thing. Where are you putting the water to make it grow? And that's where when we're looking at those highly processed foods, we have to be really mindful that they are feeding the fat cells in the body, which is often not supportive if you're trying to lose weight.
The other thing too with that just showed up, kids, right? So thinking about our kids, and we live in a world right now where there is more childhood obesity than ever before. And those fat cells, right? They're developing so many more fat cells than they should.
Yes.
Right? And it's going to be more difficult for them. If you are overweight in childhood, it does become harder to lose weight later because those fat cells can fill up so easily. You're not, right? Like they're already.
I know. So it's scary when I see so many. I know. Childhood obesity. I mean, adult obesity scares me, but childhood obesity, when you watch even the kids, they're playing soccer. Like I notice it when we watch the kids' sports where I'm like, I feel so bad for that child. And like, they're trying their hardest to run as fast as they can. But I'm like, you have 40 extra pounds on your little 9-year-old body.
Can you imagine Theodore with a 40-pound backpack?
Exactly.
Just like, here you go, go play soccer.
And like, it's good. Great. You're out playing soccer. That's great. I'm glad you're moving your body. But you're like, what a disposition for you.
Right?
That's a hard thing. Mm-hmm. And so we have to be really mindful. I think when it comes to the nutrition of our children, we really talk about not trying to shame and guilt them, but we really need to be careful with the education piece and not leaning so much on those convenience foods. If there's a lot of highly processed foods in your house, your kids are going to grab them. That's going to be their go-to. Their palates are going to be designed.
Are going
for
to
that.
Grab it for them. That's mm-hmm. one of the things that I'm loving so much about homeschooling is lunch.
Yes.
Lunch
yes.
is something we can make. It's something that we can yes. from good sources, from things we've grown.
And you guys grow so many things. You didn't have your own chickens and all
real
that.
Real chickens. Yeah. Alive. Now dead. Chickens. Yes.
Kids,
yes.
go grab your chicken.
Go get a chicken. Go get the eggs. Like it's, yeah.
Yeah.
But honestly,
I love that.
Right?
I love
like,
that.
But that's a big thing because I found making school lunches such a challenge because yes. so much of it is it comes in a package and you chuck it in the lunch kit and it's mm-hmm. right. We're right now too. We're focusing on this is one of my big goals for the rest of the year is to only make our own bread.
Oh, I love that.
So not buying bread.
Yeah.
We make it.
Oh, I love that. That's
so
amazing.
A little while ago, I made 8 loaves. Oh my God.
Oh, good for
was,
you, girl.
It was not intentional. We're still learning, but yeah. So that's,
I love that.
Girl. Yeah. But we were talking, my family and I, we were chatting about this. When you make a homemade loaf, it might last maybe 4 days before, mm-hmm. before molding. Mm-hmm. When you get a loaf of bread from the grocery store, 2 weeks, mm-hmm. 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And then you might freeze it.
You might freeze it. Right. So you think about the preservatives or the, mm-hmm. the, I don't know if chemical is the right word, but the chemical disposition of that bread versus the chemical disposition of homemade bread. Mm-hmm. There's so much difference, right? Even in something that is a high carb food that probably you don't want to be eating all the time. But yeah, anyways.
I love that.
Ooh, girl.
All right. That was fun. I know. We got 10. This might be a two-parter. We'll see how we do.
We've been big on the two-parters because we just friggin' talk too much, which is good, guys. We have learned.
Well, we took our summer break. And I feel like since coming back from summer break, it's been like, I have so much to share. I have all these ideas.
Yes.
So, yes. But yes. So that is number one.
Okay.
Number two is the not moving enough. And people will be like, but I go to the gym 5 times a week, or I walk my dog every day. And they're like, but they're not losing weight. But if we think about how much we move now versus how much we used to have to move in a day, oh my God, it's totally, totally different. And so for when people come to me and they're like, I can't lose weight. And they tell me this whole story. I go 5 days a week and I do all of this and I do the cardio. It's like, okay, so that's what you do in 1 hour a day. What do you do the other 23 hours of the day? Mm-hmm. And that's going to matter so much more than what you do in that 1 hour. And so moving more is just one of those things that when people will say like, well, I'm really obese or I'm really overweight. I really want to like get started. The best thing anybody can do, just start moving more. And that comes from intentional steps. That's the simple stuff, the parking far away in the parking lot. It's finding different ways that you could add more movement to your day. Could you go for a 10-minute walk after your meal? Could you find ways to even maybe instead of using your Roomba, I'm a Roomba person, but instead
I have a Roomba too. I was like a Dyson.
Instead of using your Roomba, maybe you're going to vacuum. It's little things like that though, that you're like, oh, okay, well, that doesn't make a big difference. Getting up from your desk for 5 minutes in your workday makes a difference. Mm-hmm. So finding little ways that you can move more. I would prefer that somebody moves every hour or every couple hours versus going to the gym, honestly, for that 1 hour stretch, if they're going to be sitting on their butt for the next 12 hours.
Totally.
It is so much more effective to break that up. And then your body's like, oh, okay, yeah, we got the heart rate elevated again. And then you're reaping all of the benefits from the heart rate being slightly elevated and then coming back down. And so moving more is the second thing that when you're trying to get started or maybe really struggling, don't add some more cardio to your routine. Just be really intentional about your movement and allow that to be different every single day, depending on how you're feeling. But just that overarching thing, I'm going to move. And if you've been sitting for a couple of hours, you're going to find a way to move no matter what. And that will go a long, long way, probably a lot more than going to the gym. And not to say there's anything wrong with the gym, but I think people think I'm doing all the things. Why isn't my body changing? Right.
I think too, an easy way to embed that into, I know you do this and we do this, but just dance.
Yes. Yes.
Turn on some tunes and you can go hard for 3 minutes. You can go soft. You can dance with your partner. You can just shake your booty, but you can do that when you're making supper, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think of that when there's days when I'm not, haven't done any cardio, haven't moved my body enough. And I'm just like, literally, like, if I know that I'm somebody who moves my body, I can bring that in such a fluid way. Totally. And it's fun for the family. It's fun for the kids, right? It's an easy way. Plus most people get joy just from listening to music, mm-hmm. right? And so adding that joy piece in, moving your body more and doing it in ways that don't have to disrupt your actual day.
Totally. Totally. Right? Yeah. If you're at the park with the kids, just going for a couple sprints, like kids are either going to chase after you or they're not. Maybe you're just going to go across the monkey bars once. Just adding in, if you think about the way a kid moves in a day, or if you just follow a kid, if you just try to keep up with their energy throughout the day, you will be so fit, girl, because you'll be chasing them here, there. And totally. Honestly, if you just are actively in with the kids, I find that to be such a big difference. And maybe when you first start, you're not able to participate fully. Mm-hmm. But participate for 5 minutes, even if it makes you breathless and uncomfortable. Because I remember for me when I was overweight, like I didn't want to participate in things because I was afraid that if I became breathless, everybody would notice. Right. Oh. And so it's like, I understand feeling like, oh, there might be judgment if I'm breathless, but just know that over time, walking up the stairs will not be hard anymore mm-hmm. if you do it. Right. Walking maybe through the playground once. Right now, maybe that is going to make you breathless having to go up those stairs and climb up and then go down the slide and have to go from a standing position into a seated position. Those kind of things maybe right now are really uncomfortable. But the more that you do them, the easier that they become. But sitting on the sidelines thinking that, oh, it's just because my genetics are the way that they are, I'm just stuck like this. No, that's you using your genetics as an excuse, right? You might have those 30 pounds, but genes are funny. Like so many genes don't need to be expressed. Genes are in our body, but if you live the right lifestyle, they're never expressed. Like I have so many that if I didn't do something, I may get diabetes, right? Because I have the gene that may happen.
Hasn't been turned on.
Yeah.
Yep. You don't have to turn it on. There's
so many like that, right? And so just totally. Being really mindful of that and not using your genetics as an excuse is really what I'm trying to get across today. I get it. I know it's hard. It makes it hard because maybe all your friends are tinier than you, but there's still lots that you can do when you take ownership for the fact that like, there's a lot of this under my control that I could take action on. So
absolutely. I think too, when it comes down to the thing that I'm hearing so much is core beliefs, mm-hmm. right? And the dismissal of environment on the body. So let's say my mom was always overweight. So I'm always going to be overweight. No, what if your mom always went to food in the evening? So now you go to food in the evening. So you think about the environment that you grew up in.
Yes.
Those are the habits yes. that you're saying are genetics.
Yes.
Those habits are just deeply formed and rooted in what you do in a day. Mm-hmm. The way you eat, the foods you choose are a product a little bit also of the environment that you grew up in and the way that you view food, right? Like we've mm-hmm. talked about just recently, money mindset, mm-hmm. because of the way that you grew up. Mm-hmm. We have food mindset. We have movement mindset. We have, right?
Yes.
And I always, the thing that makes me giggle a little bit, if you went back 200 or 300 years ago, we've kind of been dipping back into history a little bit. Do you not think that those people would laugh so hard at us that we have to like go to a building to move heavy things around to burn off excess energy?
I know.
They would be like, no energy. Like you need that calorie. They would, it was the opposite, right? It was very much like,
yes.
So I think that's kind of, it's funny in like a historical food kind of sense.
Totally. Totally.
But, yeah.
Totally.
Okay. So food, less processed foods, more movement. What else do we got to have?
Muscle.
Like these babies. Hey. I look at your traps and I'm like, oh, geez.
So not having enough muscle. right? Mm-hmm. And so when we don't have muscle on our body, our metabolism is that much slower. And we are essentially not burning the same amount of calories throughout the day if we don't have enough muscle. And I think particularly for women, they're so afraid to strength train. And you know what's so funny? Because if somebody came to me and they had 100 pounds to lose, what I would say to them, we're going to start off with, I would have them strength train. Absolutely. We would be picking up weights and then doing the moving more part. But I think a lot of them would be wanting me to prescribe them a bunch of cardio and be like, well, like, don't you want me to go on the treadmill? Don't you want me to like hop on a bike? I've always been told. I'm like, yeah, that would burn calories, but I actually would prefer that you go outside and you soak up all the vitamins and minerals that come from the earth and move your body in that way and not do it in an inside environment. In the inside environment, we can do the strength training and really focus on getting those movement patterns that you need for your life to be easier. But yeah, it would not be like, here's your 5 hours of cardio a week. I would be prescribing that to be the place where they would start. And so when it comes to building muscle, people overcomplicate that too. If anybody's listening that comes from like the bodybuilding space, maybe they've learned to break up muscle groups, or maybe people have even seen that on social media. Oh, she's doing a glute workout now. She's doing a shoulder workout now. They may have seen these kind of things. If you're somebody who is just struggling to A, get started, or just wants that like basic on what I should be focusing my energy on, we really just have to focus on your big lifts. So squats, deadlifts,
Large muscle groups, right?
Large muscle groups, yeah. And just get really good at that. Get really good at squatting. Get really good at deadlifting. That's bending over and picking something back up and being able to keep your core strong throughout the movement. Being able to do push-ups, being able to do some sort of pulling motion. So when people are first starting, sometimes I'll have them do where they're just hanging. So you're just holding onto your body in a dead hang, having your back just have to be engaged in that particular motion. And then, yeah, so you have that's your pressing motion, your pulling motion. And then your last one is you need the core stability. But generally, people just starting out, I just have to teach them how to breathe. And really, how do you breathe with your entire diaphragm being engaged and your entire transverse abdominis also being engaged? So breathing with your stomach being part of that. Because what happens, and this happens also when we're pregnant, all of those muscles, they stop working. It's like, because you feel as though I'm a bigger girl or I'm a bigger guy, and you just stop engaging with that posture so that your core is really engaged. So I'm just teaching them how to breathe. So that's what I would do. And I would just do that a few days a week. So get that muscle on your frame, add a little bit more weight each week to those lifts and see your body change from there. There's no sense in like breaking your body part up, do full body every single time, and get really, really good at those movement patterns. Because that's what trains you for life, right? Like being able to lift things overhead or lift your body off from the ground. That's going to help. Being able to pull yourself up. Let's say you fall down and you have to reach for a handle. Being able to pull yourself up, that's training you for life. Mm-hmm. Or even like having to reach up and grab a can off of the shoulder.
Your grandkids, yeah. Right?
All like, of those things. Mm-hmm. So you want to add muscle to your frame in that way. The other way that we can add muscle to our frame is honestly, use your kids. You want to toss a kid around? Literally, how many times, I don't know if you ever did this when the kids were little, it doesn't need to be an actual workout.
Yeah.
Lift them overhead, do the airplane, pick them up. And you know what? Your kids get bigger. That's perfect. That's progressive overload, right? And so if you don't have weights at home, figure it out. Put stuff into your laundry basket and pick it up. Mm-hmm. Find the soup cans or fill up a big water jug. Find something that creates resistance on your body if buying a set of weights or getting a gym membership is too much. But find ways to really master those motions so that you can add muscle to your frame. The journey becomes that much easier the more muscle that you have. And you feel really great when you feel strong. When you feel weak and fragile, because your body doesn't have that supportive tissue around you, it makes life very, very challenging. So
amazing. And I feel like I naturally, and this is again, probably from lifestyle growing up, but we were in a lot of sports. So I've always been a fairly athletic person.
Yeah.
Have you always been athletic?
No.
So from that struggle place of just like weak or fragile or like, Is that something that you feel is a lot different now because of the muscle on your body?
Oh, yeah. Totally. Okay. Totally. I would say, I was always tired all of the time when I was overweight. And I think the other thing is, like, you say you're, like, roll over on your ankle. Like, I'm a clumsy person. But B, when things like that would happen, that would feel so much more debilitating than what it would right now. If I were to, like, roll over on my ankle, most of the time I'd probably be able to just, like, get myself right back up because I'd be able to push on my hand, come back up. I remember that being a struggle, right? Or trying to just do average everyday things, right? It's just a lot more of a struggle. So sure. I feel and honestly, if you're aging, it's that much worse, right? You're already a little bit fragile. You're like trying to keep, like, if you want to stay young,
other
keep
mobility
muscle.
Things are
yeah, keep muscle
up.
On your body. Honestly, muscle is so, so amazing as you're aging because then you don't have all of these bones that break, right? Think about how many old people, they fall and then all of a sudden they broke four bones, right?
Well, and that's when you're old, that falling is an event.
Yeah.
My grandma had a fall. I'm like, well, my kid had 20.
Yeah.
And there's like, whoosh, right? Yeah. But it's, that makes a huge, that
totally.
Makes sense.
It's almost like a cushion, right? You wrap a cushion around it or a pillow. It's that much easier to be able to support yourself moving forward. And I think, especially for people who maybe have larger frames, often those people can gain muscle quite easily. Mm-hmm. Once they start strength training, they already, maybe they can gain fat easily too, but they can gain muscle really quickly. So that can really be beneficial for you. And then this core kind of leads back to the abundance piece you were talking about at the beginning. So because food is so readily available, we do not appreciate it or look at the experience in the same way that we do or the way we used to. We don't look at food and go, oh my God, this is a gift. Mm-hmm. This is amazing. We don't have the same perception at all with food. So the energy exchange between the two and the way that we are so wasteful with it is almost this place of, we become almost like a garbage can, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, and then the experience of eating has also doesn't have the same value. And so often what's happened for people is they just choose what's quick, fast, easy. So that whole gratitude and that whole perception is a big, big factor, I think, for people.
Absolutely. I think too, for to that point, what used to be like food was a celebration. And often still is. So when we get together on Sunday with my families, we get together for supper, right? When we get together with friends, we're getting together tonight, we're going to do it over a meal. Birthdays, there's meal, there's food, there's so much connection to the actual food part of the day. Mm-hmm. Like if we're going to get together, let's do food, right?
Yeah.
And there, in a different time period, that was something that When you got together over food, there was so much celebration. Mm-hmm. There was so, because the food itself was a celebration, right? Whereas I think many of us in our lives are seeking that joy and fulfillment, that celebration too often, right? Mm-hmm. And as a band-aid or a fix or as a way of covering up anxiety or stress or worry, right? And so we choose this joyful thing or this band-aid versus it just being food, a nourishment, a like celebration of all that is. I think of Thanksgiving or Christmas or, right? Like there's so much delicious food and really just like being present in that. But I think we recreate that in so many artificial and superficial ways throughout life that we want to create that experience on a Tuesday in the evening with chips and, right? Like that wild abundance. When that wild abundance, that like really that feast mode is really actually designed for those big family gatherings, those big celebrations, that much food isn't going to make you overweight on Christmas or on Thanksgiving when it's that one time big feast.
Absolutely.
But we live in a world where that so much abundance where it's like, I feel sad, I'm turning to my food. Whereas in previous generations, they couldn't. You couldn't be sad and turn to food because that's all you get. Mm-hmm. So there isn't any more for tomorrow if you eat that tonight.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, there's
good
my
insights.
Little snippet.
I love that.
We got
that.
One more to go and I think we'll break this into a two-parter because
I'm... It's some of it, it's like it's obvious, but it's not not obvious. It's simple enough that it's like, oh yeah, 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 I could do that, right? For sure. But I think so much of this is also just your mindset associated with this. Diet culture has led you to believe so many things are true that, like, either it's genetics or you have to buy this program or you got to do this thing. But when you break it down to these, like, simple concepts, you're like, okay, so I just need to do what they used to do 150 years ago. And they probably had it completely simplified. Let's be realistic. Nutrition and exercise for them at that stage was just a way to, like,
live. That was just life. You go out to the fields, you work all day, you come in, you have a big lunch, you go back out, you come back in, you have a big supper, you go to bed, and you're eating foods that you've grown that have no chemicals on them, right? Like all of the things that go with that. And moving your body wasn't something you thought about.
No.
You just did it.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? You weren't, for sure. You didn't have a kid stuck to a smartphone, right? Like totally. You had to. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
The other thing that I think, something that dawned on me, I was chatting with a client and one of the downloads that came through, and it was earth shattering for this client. And for me, it was like, holy fucking shit. The food that we eat it interacts with our body, but the way we feel when we eat that food creates that emotion in the body. So think about chocolate cake. You have a piece of chocolate cake in front of you. And I think of our girlfriend, Sharina, who's like, she's genetically perfect for like, but she also lives a very active lifestyle. She's got muscle anyways. But when she eats chocolate cake, there's not an ounce of guilt. There's not an ounce of shame. There's not an ounce of, oh, I shouldn't do this. I'm a bad girl. It's, this is so good. I love this. Oh, yeah. Yum, yum, yum. Oh, yes, this is so good. Like, happy birthday to you. Like, girl, thanks for the cake. There's so much gratitude that comes with that cake and the eating of that cake. Mm-hmm. So that's what that cake goes into her body as. Mm-hmm. And so that diet culture that you're talking about, the shame, the guilt, even as you eat the cake, you're not happy. Mm-hmm. You're in guilt mode. You're in fear. I'm bad. This is awful. And so as you consume, that's what that cake becomes inside your body. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's just when we think about the way we want to feel when we eat, that's what that food turns into in the body.
That makes sense. Total sense.
Right. And I think of even when we were at Bodhi Retreat, the food as it was prepared, one of the things that Elise really was concerned with was she wanted the people who were preparing the food to be in a very calm state.
And grounded.
Grounded. So if she literally took me and them into the back and was like, Ashley, do your Reiki on these girls. Mm-hmm. The food can all wait. But when they come back out, right, like just really wanting,
because it influences
them. Yes. So that the people who are eating this food aren't picking up that anxiety, aren't picking up that stress and that, right? And that's just from the hands that are preparing them. I had somebody.
Think about restaurants.
Right?
Busyness of restaurants and those people that are preparing the food, right?
And I've worked in restaurants. I know you have. The politics that goes on, the snippiness and the like, come on. There's a lot of frustration and angst and cattiness that can be
in that space for sure. Mm. It's an interesting way to look at it. Eh? Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. All right. Number 5.
Okay. Sorry. See, this is why we have to do it in two parts.
I know. I love it. So number 5 is endocrine disrupting chemicals. And so,
whoa, that sounds big.
It is. So this is really interesting. So with the chemicals that may be in our food, and particularly from anything plastic. So anything that has come in contact with plastic. So you're looking at the ways that you store food, but also just the packaging, right? Think about how many kids' foods come in plastics. So those plastics influence the endocrine system in the body because your body reads it as estrogen. So when we look at all of the hormone imbalances and how messed up so many people's systems are, plastics are the key reason, because your body's, they're called xenoestrogens is the reason why, but your body reads that as estrogen. So we look at all these different body shapes now that like 150 years ago. You didn't have body shapes like that. But it's because the body is being so disrupted in the endocrine system that your hormones are so out of whack. And so for a lot of people that are seeing that, they're like, oh, and that's what's going on. And honestly, isn't that mind-blowing?
I just want to like go into my house and like,
get rid of all the plastic.
What do you store stuff
Everything in? Everything has to be in glass. And going to, when you buy anything so kids funny. Related, if you buy anything kids related, if it comes in any sort of plastic, and like they do like the garbage free lunches, like my stepson's school is that they can't bring any, you can't bring any, anything that would have any sort of wrapper.
Like but you can put it in Tupperware. Like, does that count as well? Tupperware,
yeah. But if you say
is that the kind of plastic too?
Yes. No plastics.
In no it. Plastic. That's funny. I drink out of a mason jar.
Well, you switched to that. So I noticed that recently. Often,
but not on, like, just, isn't
intuitively.
That, I guess.
Yes, yes. I probably, like, I know I need to switch my big water jug that I do. But yeah, so your body. And so then we look at even women, like so many women, their bodies are, look at where they're storing all of their weight. And you would see this energetically too, but in the stomach and in the butt, that's all estrogen. That is all estrogen in your body that's like not being cleared out the way that it's supposed to be being cleared out. And so making that conversion to get rid of all plastic in your life and even really, really minimizing it.
I'm doing it. I'm fucking doing it.
Yeah.
I am I am all fucking in on that.
Yeah. Isn't that huge though?
Oh my God. And I, so the tick in my brain, and I have no idea if this is accurate or not, but we're seeing so many transgender and like boys thinking they're girls and people thinking they're cats and like all this mix up. Is there an over?
Maybe.
Is a contributing factor could be the amount of plastics the in of contact with our food and the estrogen in the body.
And fucking up how much, what their hormones are. Yes, absolutely. Because think about it.
Guys, I'm just like.
I have never thought about it that way, but think about it. The levels of testosterone that certain people should have.
Yes.
They just don't have anymore.
And so I have heard this, and again, I haven't done the deep research on it, but 200 years ago, the male, the masculine points were at, they calculated it to be 2000, whatever those points are. I don't know. Right now, the masculine points for our generation of men is 400. Wow. So you think about like men going off to war.
But think about the, what could be, think about that. But like, so say, so I understand, but now I'm really, really understanding. Like light bulbs are going off because of the way that all the hormones interact. It makes sense that estrogen as such a big player would make testosterone levels that much lower.
Right.
That's fucked up. I didn't know those numbers, but I love our light bulbs.
Oh my God. I love like giving you guys light bulbs and that's kind of the whole point. But when we have these like, so guys, I'm committing right here on the podcast. First time ever. No more plastics.
Yeah. Okay. I'm doing it too. If you're doing it, I'm doing it.
Okay. We will keep you guys posted because.
Yeah. But that's, yeah, it's mega huge. And then, I mean, you cut back even on so many of your like grocery bill things.
Yeah.
My kids are going to be sad when I say
sorry, guys.
Yeah, maybe one day a month or something. But
we commit right now to minimizing it to 80% with the goal of 100 by next calendar year.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that. I think the easy one will be like what we store things in.
Yes.
The harder one will be the conveniency snacks, I think will be the harder
purchasing
one.
Of, yes, I agree.
Yes. Whew. Okay. All right. That's huge. All right. We got to 5 guys. So, yeah. So these are some things that if you guys want to try them, absolutely. I do think that they're going to make a big difference for you. But the other thing I'm saying is honestly, stop blaming your genetics, girls. Honestly, if things aren't changing and you're finding that things aren't working, we would absolutely love to be the girls to help you release all of that. But also just that, like going back to our laws of karma, you are responsible. If you want to make these changes, we'll be here to support you, to help you. But all of these things are.
And I think what it comes back to too is maybe your genetics do fucking suck. Mm-hmm. So what? Mm-hmm. You know what? You wouldn't not drive a car because you were shorter than your best friend. Mm-hmm. If you needed pedal extensions, you'd get pedal extensions. You'd move your seat right to the front. So there are going to be people who do. I think of Sharina. Mm-hmm. I think of Christina. People in my life who, it doesn't matter what they eat, they
do. They have the opposite problem, though. They have, like, I can't eat enough.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't eat enough to gain weight. So they have the opposite problem. They may have a metabolism that is a better position for what the world would believe to be better, but those people may say,
but their struggle is different.
Yeah. Do you know what it's like to be hungry or like to feel as though I can't get enough food in the day?
And, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So, but that's where I'm coming back to. Maybe your genes do suck. Mm-hmm. So fucking what? Mm-hmm. Work harder. Get the people in your life to support that. You can still make change. It's not an excuse.
It's not an excuse. And also, can you switch your perspectives to say that they rock? Like, I think about it, I'm like,
100%.
I literally don't know if I would take care of my body in the way that I do if I was a really tiny girl naturally. I don't know if I would take care of my health. I think I might be like, oh, I'm okay.
And I do believe, and I've thought this for quite a while because it's been my experience. I see it's been yours as well. Our biggest hurdle or our biggest flaw or our biggest challenge usually leads us into our gift.
Absolutely.
And leads us into, so if you weren't overweight, you wouldn't be doing the things you're doing.
Exactly.
If I didn't have debilitating anxiety postpartum and like leading up to that, I would not be doing Reiki.
Absolutely. Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
So I think that those are the things that we think of as our biggest struggle. Flipping them, like you said, those are gifts to you. Mm-hmm. These are, if your body is telling you to make a change and it's so hard, that communication is loud. It's clear.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
All right, girly. All right. Well, lots of love. We will see you for part two next week. And I think that's it for today.
Okay. We love you guys.
Bye.